listener for an adult audience.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Listener discretion is advised.
Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Loveline starts now.
Hey everybody, it is Loveline tonight. I'm delighted to welcome on Loveline Danny Bonaducci.
Thank you for coming back, sir.
It's so great to see you.
Thank you for inviting me. I always have a lovely time here.
Well, we appreciate you coming in. And we were just talking before the mics heated up about MySpace.
Mm-hmm. MySpace is a lovely little website. It's a website, right? Is that what
you're talking about? Yeah, it's a web community. It's it's MySpace. It's not your space, I'm hearing.
No, it is no longer MySpace. I was telling Dr. Drew this off the air.
Yes, let's hear about this.
Well, I'll give you the fairly cleaned up version. Just when I was in, you know, when I first was going to meetings in the program, if you will, everybody was on MySpace, and I literally thought it was a sober website.
Well, that's fine.
And that's who I met on there. And then all of a sudden, I start getting pictures of scantily clad women that said, "I want to be your friend." And I go, "Okay, I'll be your friend too." So what happened was, and I'll just be honest, because my wife knows, well, no, she busted me. What happened was, Gretchen does not speak in the same tones I do about romance. I like to say all sorts of flowery prose, and Gretchen does not.
Okay.
So I thought, I will get this out of the way right now. I'll go on MySpace, write to the girl in the bikini from Wisconsin all the flowery prose I can think of, such as, and there were like a dozen of them. Here's a perfect example. You ready? Yeah. Here's what I would write. And then I'd hit it and go to like 12 women. I would say something like, "You're my last thought before I go to sleep, my first thought in the morning, and if there is a God in heaven, I'll dream in between." And then I just hit go, and it sent it to a dozen chicks I had never heard of in my whole life. And so Gretchen breaks my code.
How did this happen?
Well, because I don't use a computer, and I'm now living on MySpace.
Oh, I see. So she knew something was up.
Yeah. So she went downstairs, and
she figured she was
going to
find a big porno collection or something.
Yeah.
Instead, she finds like Cyrano de Bergerac.
Right. Very nicely said. Exactly. So, she said, "That's it, I'm leaving you." I said, "What are you? You can't leave me. What are you talking about?" She said, "These are love letters." I said, "No, they're not. They're typing." I said, "You can't leave." I said, "If I cheated, I might get VD. From this, I might get carpal tunnel. You can't leave a guy for carpal tunnel." So we kind of worked out, but she was mad. And I went on MySpace, and I said, "My wife feels that my behavior on here has been inappropriate. I will no longer be speaking to you."
And to all the women on your little master.
To everyone. And to anybody else, too.
And your friend list, is that what it was?
Yeah, that's what it was.
So if anybody happened to have communicated with Danny Bonaducci back in the days when he was feeling a little romantic.
Back in the days, 4 months ago.
Just go ahead and call in tonight. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. We'd love to talk to you. Here how he made you feel, both when he was talking you up a little bit and also when he just let you down.
I was talking him up, too. You know what, though? I said to Gretchen when she went, because I'll do anything to not have her leave me. At the end of the day, I have to be married to Gretchen. That's the law. But when I realized she wasn't going to go and I could discuss this with her like an adult, I said, "You know what? I made a lot of these girls feel really good."
And what'd she say to that?
"Shut up. I hate you."
By the way, producer Ann, before the mics heat up, Danny was telling us the story, and producer Ann was in here and freaked out.
Yeah.
She couldn't, she was mad at you. She left her and stormed out.
I said, I used to
because
be
your favorite guest, too. You wrote flowery prose
Gretchen
to women
hates,
you don't know.
Gretchen hates, like, when I was in rehab, I got a letter from her with a dozen roses, and it said, "Your loving wife forever, love, Gretchen." And then I realized, hey, that's not her handwriting.
Oh.
So I said, "Did you even write that card?" She said, "Well, no, the flower guy wrote it, but I made the call." And I thought, wait a second, did you or did your assistant call?
Ooh.
And it turns out, "I'll be your loving wife forever" comes from Gretchen to her assistant, gets mailed over to Pedro, and Pedro sends me flowers in rehab.
Here's the unfortunate reality, is men generally are okay with that.
Not this man.
If you had been sending that to her, it would have been worse than the Cyrano de Bergerac act.
Do you know what I wrote on the last dozen roses I sent her?
You ever tried reusing flowers? Passing along flowers?
Not the girls I'm married to.
That's bad.
The girls I'm sleeping with. I'm a big regifter.
More about that later. Anyway, what you were saying, Bridget, did what?
I sent her a dozen roses recently, and it said, "I will love you for the rest of your life. P.S. This is my handwriting." I hated that.
How's your head since the motorcycle accident?
Fine, a little red. Oh, no, I went boxing the other day and lost.
Okay, badly. All right.
Oh, I'm all good.
You seem to be on a sort of one-man crusade against your brain.
Yes. Well, it's
Danny versus central nervous system.
It has not served me well, doctor.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It owes a couple good roundhouses. Yeah, you owe it that.
My heart is broken once or twice in my life. My head has hurt me repeatedly.
Yeah, yeah, I'll give you that. But you've more than sort of settled the score, I think. Lying in the pool of your own blood in a motorcycle helmet was pretty good.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that. I kind of feel even. I really don't feel the need right now.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's why you boxed today?
It was a few days ago. The red marks, this guy really won. You should see the other guy. He's fine.
Oh, my God. All right, let's take some calls here.
Let's
do it. Again, the phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. This is none other, of course, than Danny Bonaducci. This is May.
Hi, May.
Hi, yes. I was just calling because I am sleeping with my boyfriend, actually. Is the first guy that I've slept with who is uncircumcised. And I'm having a
good
problem.
Times.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm having a problem because the smell is really, really bad, and I can't give him oral sex. And he says that it is too sensitive underneath the foreskin, like around the base of the head where the foreskin attaches, for him to clean it. So I tried using baby wipes, and he says that that hurts. And he says that if he uses soap in the shower under there, that that hurts later because when the foreskin slides back over the head, there isn't any lubrication.
Okay, so this has nothing to do with the fact that it's just ugly. Because that's a fact. They're ugly that way. They shouldn't make them like that. You know, it's like flamingos. God just made them wrong.
They shouldn't make penises like that. Yeah, you know, no matter what we do with the penis, it's bad.
But can I tell you something? Here's my estimation on this. In real life, that if we want to go the ugly route, and I kind of do, that it's a thing he's doing to you. That it's something he wants you to suffer, that he can, so he can be large and in charge, because it's patently untrue that he cannot clean that thing.
Doesn't seem right to me,
really,
either, I gotta say.
I mean, how should he go about it, though? Because he never had a father figure, so he doesn't know how to do this stuff. And he just thinks it's normal to,
how old is this guy? Hey, May.
He's 23, actually.
What's he do for a living?
He is a math PhD candidate.
Okay.
He's a PhD candidate, and he can't figure out how to wipe his foreskin?
Well, he never had a father figure, and his mother was a big-time hippie, so he doesn't
Was
really
his
know
mother a mathematician? He doesn't seem to need a father figure to accomplish certain tasks like, I don't know, be a PhD.
Right.
I bet you he doesn't need a father figure to take a baby wipe to his foreskin.
Right, he can solve the Schrodinger equation, but he can't pull back the foreskin with a Q-tip and wipe around. Here's the one piece of advice, May, I would give you, is that the smell is usually bacteria, and if you dry it all out, like take a handheld hair dryer, pull the skin back and bone dry, get it just dried out, that may help. Okay?
That wouldn't hurt him?
No, none of this hurts him. He's making this up.
Penises are basically indestructible.
Yeah, I know mine is. I put it on a lot of bad places.
So
let me ask you this. You don't think the abrasion, if you will, for lack of a better term, the friction of actually having sex is more than a soapy Q-tip? If he can handle that, he can handle washing it.
A lot of, semen that's lubricating and stuff underneath the foreskin. So.
May.
Okay.
Please, dear God, let it be that you're not majoring in biology.
No, actually, I'm going to be a doctor.
Oh, May.
I'm starting medical school in 3 months.
Okay, she hasn't started.
I wasn't even going to go. Just the thought of going that far made me retch. But, I wasn't going to go. Just I was hoping it at least wasn't zoology, but now it's medicine.
It's a sham.
Yeah, May. What? Okay. What? Why is this all so mysterious to you?
Because, I believe him, but I mean...
Hold on. No. Have you never had a boyfriend before?
I've never had a boyfriend who is uncircumcised.
Okay,
so
there's essentially no difference.
Okay.
You know what the big difference is, May? Somebody at some point took a knife to the circumcised one, and we survived it. Okay, this guy can wash up.
Yeah,
great.
There's really not a big difference, and you're making much ado about nothing,
and by the way,
allowing him to do so.
And I do not mean to be graphic here, but if you were denying me oral sex over this, I'd chew it off.
The foreskin, the prepuce.
Yeah, I would chew it off in order to get oral sex, and any real man would. This is something he's doing to you for no good reason.
Okay. All right, I
don't know if I can say it more strongly than that, May,
yeah,
so thank you, Danny. That pretty much...
When you'd rip it off with your teeth, you're saying it.
Done and done.
Thank you, sir.
Ryan, what's up?
Hi, I had a couple questions for you.
All right, buddy, go ahead.
One is with puberty, you know the breasts in the man sometimes?
Yeah, I do.
Well, what age do they usually go away at?
Well,
because 16... I'm 15 and a half and I still have them.
How much do you weigh?
I am 6'2", 185 pounds.
Bouncy. I'll tell you this, and hopefully this will help you out. Most people look at me as being in excellent physical condition. I actually am not. I chain smoke and have done terrible damage to my organs. But I appear to be in excellent physical condition.
Your musculoskeletal system is excellent.
When I was down to very low body fat, working out left and right, you know what I did, man? I went and got liposuction in my boobs because they just wouldn't go away.
Oh, no kidding.
No
interesting.
No kidding. Mm. I weighed 157 pounds when I had it done because I thought I could diet them off. I was a rail and still had boobs.
Had you taken steroids prior to that?
No. Okay. No, it's a long time.
Because the steroids will convert to estrogen and cause some, you know, boob growth. But Ryan, it can easily stay with you through your middle adolescence. At 16, 17, if they're still there, you might want to look into something cosmetic, a cosmetic procedure.
But just so you know, man, I'm backing your play on this completely. That was we actually refer to it as the Bonaducci boobs in my house, because all the men, if you gain a couple pounds, we get boobs.
Beautiful.
And I had mine. I went and paid $3,000 and had them taken off.
You took out the lipo. Yeah, you were happy with that result?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Steve.
Hi.
Steve. Hello? Yeah, buddy, what's up?
Hey, I have a question for Danny Bonaducci.
Speaking.
That's good.
Oh, sweet. I was just wondering, your show Breaking Bonaducci on VH1.
Yes, sir.
It was. I was just wondering if you were always that intense or just intense like during the taping of the show because of all the added pressure.
That's a really well-worded question. Thank you very much for being so appropriate in the wording of that, because, yes, I am more intense than most guys, and that's what got me the show. When they brought the cameras to my house wanting to see extreme behavior, that made me so crazy that I would the stuff that I do every day, that which is the reason they hired me, did not seem acceptable to me.
It was not enough.
I took a leap, and after making a certain leap, then it became completely out of my control. Like, I was no longer performing for the cameras. All of a sudden, I'm going, oh, my God, you have to stop this. They're going to think you're a nut. And I could not control myself anymore. So it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will. I'm more intense than most. Hopefully not as intense as that, but the cameras did it. You know, they add 10 pounds and make you crazy.
All right, sweet, dude. I just wanted to know because it was an amazing show and an amazing
season. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Now, you're still filming season two?
Season two right now, yeah.
How's that working out?
Actually, much better. I had a couple of real bad moments in the beginning, but I realized early on that I didn't want any part of this, and I took what I believed to be some... I pulled the producers aside, and I said, we're going to have to really work because I can't do that anymore. I thought to get a job like back in radio, which now it's taken long enough, I thought they'd be beating down my door the first day. I have a hit TV show. My radio show was number one when I left, or number two, and they weren't. That TV show, people just believed it and said, this guy's unhireable. We can't go near him. He's nothing but trouble.
Interesting.
And I've never even been late to work.
Right.
And I thought that they wouldn't care how I delivered a hit. It was the biggest show VH1 ever had.
Right.
And I thought, nobody's going to care how I gave them a hit. They're just going to care that I deliver the hits every time.
Right.
And in this case, they watched that show with what that young man said, a level of intensity that frightened some people.
Huh. Mostly radio people, though.
Because
radio people, you got to come to work every day, and they get a little more nervous about that kind of thing.
But I've never missed that. I'm not even sick.
No, I know you're a radio guy, and that's.
But I did scare some employers off, which now seems to be over. I'm looking at some very fine deals at the moment.
Katie, what's up? Katie,
you with me? It's Dr. Drew, man, answer.
Katie, you're on Danny Bonaducci. She probably went to the bathroom. We'll give her a couple seconds here.
Okay.
Let's see, Megan, what's up there?
Hello.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. I was just wondering how I can tell if my boyfriend is off coke.
Oh, God. Are you kidding?
Well, but in many ways, she can't. Right? An addict that really wants to hide it is going to hide it.
I've never found that with certain drugs, and blow being one of them for me. I could never, hide
that. You get kind of manic.
I start chewing my lip immediately. Yeah. Your weight changes. Let me ask you something. What are the symptoms that let you know he's on coke when he is on coke? What does he do that's different from his everyday behavior?
You know, I don't know, because I've never known him off drugs.
There's how you know.
Well, here's an easier, even a better test. He's like, a crack addict?
He used to do tweak, and then he got off that. Then he started doing coke, and he got me doing it. And then he started doing heroin and cocaine.
Are you a Mormon? Okay.
No.
Heroin and cocaine. And
you know, that's what killed John Belushi, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nothing to you. I'll tell you what.
I just don't know how I know if he's off of it.
Well, here's how you know if he's not in a program and if he's not in a structured environment, he's using. Very simple. You don't get off heroin and cocaine by wishing it to stop or by trying to make it stop on your own. It's a disease state that is unmanageable, by definition, is going to progress and continue. And it's a fatal. The heroin is fatal.
Yep. And I'll tell you that I know that from experience that I never thought I would have. You know, I've been going to meetings, and I go to meetings with hardcore people. They're who I like the best.
Which is Megan's boyfriend.
Right. And, you know, they're all shooting up in their necks because they have no other veins. That was, like, the first story I heard.
They shoot in the vein of the penis.
Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. And I have now, like, one guy died that I didn't really know. I kind of recognized his face, and he wasn't there anymore. But all of a sudden, within 6 months, five people I know just died of overdose. Heroin killed them right in front of everybody. Right, and those who didn't die from heroin killed themselves by, both of them was weird, hanging because they couldn't do heroin anymore. They were just, I can't do this, so they killed themselves. This is really bad, Megan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he needs to be treated. Does he say
he's off drugs?
He says he's off of it, and I don't see how he can go to the city and get it because he doesn't have a car.
Here's what you do on that. If he's willing to prove that he's off drugs to you, just go to your nearest Rite Aid or Walmart. And just go to the pharmacy and say, hey, I'd like to spend $23 on an in-home drug kit. And under no circumstances let him go into the restroom by himself.
Right. You watch
and
him pee.
They're as good as every laboratory, and I've been to every laboratory in town. You can't. If it's on coke, the second line will say cocaine. And if a line comes up, he's clean. And if it doesn't come up, he's on dope and possibly pregnant.
But it has lines of what drug it shows.
It'll say it's the easiest thing in the world. It says cocaine, meth, opiates, and something else, a methamphetamine, well, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And every time a line comes up, they're clean. And if no line comes up, that's the drug they're using. And heroin's a big, easy one, and so is cocaine.
And he may be getting by with pot or something else in the meantime, or maybe Vicodin or Norco. What's that?
He smokes pot, and I just don't care about that.
Well, that keeps his disease active. That is, you cannot stop the heroin unless he stops everything.
Really?
That's how it works. That is in the biology of the disease.
I got to tell you, I'm a full-blown, dyed-in-the-wool drug addict. There's no two ways about it. I'm a blackout drunk that can take handfuls of Vicodin all day long just to feel normal, and I'm doing nothing. I'm not smoking a little pot because a little pot leads to a little drink, and a little drink leads to drugs every time. The doctor's absolutely right.
It's just the way the biology works. So he needs to be somewhere. He needs to be in treatment, and if not, he's going to die of this probably.
Can we get high?
Huh?
Okay. No. Okay. All right, Megan.
That's a heartless bastard.
Yes. All right, let's try this. Alicia? What's wrong with line five? It keeps hanging up. This is, let's try Jenny.
Jenny?
Hello?
Hi, Jenny.
Hey, what's up? Is this Dr. Drew?
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, when I get really nervous, my stomach starts, gets really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know why that is. It's only when I get nervous.
Probably irritable bowel syndrome. People get tummy aches. Some people get headaches. Some people get backaches. Some people get what you
got. Yeah, I get headaches too sometimes.
Okay. Why are you so nervous?
It's only when I'm in front of people, a lot of people or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's this boy in my class and he gave me a note. And it's my stomach got really tight.
Yeah, it's called puberty.
Yeah, you're going to be okay, Jenny. It's all right.
But you know what I like? That sometimes, because the fun calls are the outrageous people who have serious problems. I guess somebody recently just told me about that they reminded, remember that call we got about the guy that delivers blood and was fantasizing about drinking it?
Yes.
That's a great call, and yes. I love it. But that was a 14-year-old girl that got a note passed into her in school, and I just think, thank God.
I know.
You know, thank God for her.
I know. It brings you back.
And now we can get back to the blood drinkers that want to do it with dogs watching.
Let's talk to Zach first. What's up, Zach?
Hello?
Hey, Zach.
Hey, I had a question, Dr. Drew.
Yeah, buddy.
This past weekend, by the way, I'm 18 years old, and this past weekend, I tried a weed for the first time with a bunch of my friends. And we smoked a lot of it. We had more than a weekend's worth, but we finished it all in a day and a half. And I'm really worried right now because I haven't smoked since Saturday night, but I've been feeling really disoriented and slow for the past few days, and I'm wondering what's going on, if I completely fried my brain or something.
No, you can have residual effect for a good week if you smoked a lot of pot. In fact, some studies have shown a full grade point performance problem, as much of the full, and they've even shown done tests with pilots and things and simulators and shown that they have persistent performance problems, particularly new learning, novel situations. Do you play sports?
Yeah.
What do you play?
Well, I play baseball and I work out a lot, so
All right. So if you're playing baseball in some sort of situation develops that you've never seen before, you're going to have trouble adapting to that. Right. Those brain mechanisms don't work so well. After another week or so, you should be back to normal. It just a single exposure like that can cause panic.
Right.
You get panic attacks,
yeah,
and that can make you feel weird.
Yeah,
but it's not going to cause any permanent brain dysfunction.
Two things real quick. One is the brain is such a remarkable organ.
Danny is living proof of his resilience.
Most people consider me bright, and I have done such extraordinary damage. So the brain is just truly resilient, and you're a young man.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't suggest doing it again. It's not a great idea, but you're going to be fine. But the thing I was wondering is, and maybe the doc can tell both of us, with heroin and cocaine, you can get it out of your system with enough cranberry juice in 72 hours.
Oh.
You can drink yourself clean.
In 6-8 hours.
Yeah. Marijuana, on the other hand, which everybody seems to think is the most acceptable drug, he only smokes pot.
Right.
Why does that stay in your system for a month? What is so strong and potent about THC?
It's where it ends up. It's fat soluble. So it goes into the fat, builds up in the fat, and then slowly comes out of the fat. So it's constantly being released into your system.
So it's not like the power of the marijuana. He just smoked a lot of pot and he'll be fine.
Right.
Okay.
Because
I wondered about that. I mean, heroin can kill you dead and everybody thinks pot's okay, but it stays in you so long.
Yeah, pot is one of the more pernicious drugs we deal with today. It's just really awful. People miss it. People that, you know, the cocaine speed pot addicts, when they stop everything, miss the pot.
Really?
That's what they miss. That's the one that's kind of always, because it has an opioid effect in some people.
Right.
And so it's literally like missing Vicodin, that kind of feeling. What's up, Christy?
Hello?
Hi, Christy.
Hi, I had a question for Danny.
Here
yes,
he
ma'am.
Is.
I'm right here.
I wanted to know from a father's point of view the effects of you abusing alcohol and drugs, how you felt as a father.
Wait. Why? What's behind that question?
Well, because my father went to prison, and he's been in there since I was about 8 years old. And I just wanted to know the personal effects on it.
How has it affected you?
I'm pretty much okay. Like, I've dealt with it, and, you know, people make mistakes, and I regularly see my father, so, I mean,
do you go visit him?
We have a good relationship.
So you've forgiven him for his disease?
For his mistakes.
His mistakes.
He's a different person now. He's still in prison, though.
Okay.
Well, I feel that I'm a different person as well, but my new guy is real new. So I don't expect, I often tell, you know, I went and bought, remember the drug test I was telling you about?
Yeah.
I littered my house with them. So at any time, there's one pretty much near where Gretchen can see it.
Because
I don't, just because I'm telling the truth does not mean I deserve to be trusted.
Right.
You know, I'm the only one that knows I'm telling the truth. I've lied consistently through my entire marriage.
Right.
So if she sees behavior she doesn't like and says, are you on drugs? And I say no, that should not be the end of it just because I'm telling the truth.
Right.
She should know. She should say, here, take this. And I told her, if I ever get indignant, it's because I'm lying.
Of course.
If I say I won't take it, you have no right. It's because I'm lying and I'm dirty.
Right, dissembling.
Okay? The second I walk into the bathroom and take it, that's how you know I'm telling you the truth and the only way. And to be honest with you, I think it's had, and I'm just starting to know this now, some pretty bad effects. Because
on
Isabella.
Yeah.
I think I'm the fun dad and always have been the fun dad. But the fact is, the other night, you know, I've had some problems with my marriage recently, and Isabella just said, she was crying the other night, and I said, "What? I don't understand. What's really so wrong? Nothing. It shouldn't be this big of a deal." And she said, "You're always leaving me." I said, "I've never left you. What are you talking about?" She said, "You went to rehab when I was however old, and you went to rehab again, and now you've lived in an apartment for a month. You're always leaving me." And I thought, oh, my God, and everything I have done is alcohol-related. Gretchen didn't kick me out because we got in a fight. Gretchen kicked me out because I was drunk and horrifying. You know, I didn't go to rehab because I wanted a little 30-day vacation. I went to rehab because I'm a drunk, and I didn't realize that that had that kind of effect on my children, where my daughter would look me in the face when I'm stone sober, crying about something else and say, honey, it's not this big of a deal, and out of nowhere, you're always leaving me. Oh, my God, it broke my heart. And I don't know that, you know, there were things I thought were kind of cute. Well, not cute, but not as sad as I realize they are now. For most of her life, she would not take a drink from my hand. I'd go to offer her the juice that she asked for, and she'd ask Mom, is there alcohol in that? I'd go, of course not, honey. And she wouldn't take it. She'd ask her mother to take a sip of it. That's a serious trust issue right there.
Mm-hmm.
That, a, you know, an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old won't take a drink from their dad.
What's that, Christy?
Did you ever get over, like, the guilt of it?
Well, I'm new at the guilt of it, to be honest. I think it would be inappropriate of me to be over it.
You know, guilt for Danny is a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
That's a new feeling for him, and he wants to feel that for a while.
Yeah, so to ask me if I've forgiven myself would be just premature. This is happening. This is real time.
Yeah.
This could have happened this evening.
Yeah.
You know, this actually was yesterday. You know, so that's not a figure of speech. This conversation had happened yesterday. So if I feel guilty, it's because I should. And the damage you asked me about happened 2 days ago.
And, Christy, why are you so concerned with dads forgiving themselves for what they do to the daughter? Again, that's you taking responsibility for the dads. Dads will take care of themselves.
Well, just because me and my dad just don't talk about how he feels about what happened, and like, I don't know.
Why don't you bring it up? I think you'll be surprised. It will help in you not fantasizing about having been or being responsible for
right.
him, because with his feelings about his disease will shock and surprise you. Because addicts' feeling about their disease is always different than the way a co or a Nomi would think they would think about it.
Right.
It's quite different.
Just so you know this, and this is maybe just for me, I don't know, because it's weird that Dr. Drew sometimes knows more about being a drunk than a really good drunk. I mean, I told you last time, I've never experienced that before. It's amazing. But the fact is, if you ask me where things went wrong in my marriage, which is, by the way, much better now, thank you very much, but if you ask me why I did some of the things I did, I will give you an excuse. There's certain things Gretchen did to me that made me feel it was okay to go ahead and do this.
Right.
At no point, if you ask me why I got drunk, will you hear my children's names come up.
Right.
They brought me nothing but joy, and I let them down. I can't imagine this guy is going to have anything to say to you aside taking responsibility for himself.
All righty.
Okay, thank you.
All right, my dear. Good luck. 1-800-LOVE-191 is the phone number. Danny Bonaducci is the guest. More you, more Danny when we return.
Can we get high?
Loveline will be right back. Be right back.
Back with more Loveline here with Danny Bonaducci. 1-800-LOVE-191 is the number. Let's take a couple of quickies here. This is Grace. What's up, Grace?
Hi. Not much.
Hey.
What's up, Grace?
I was curious about how necessary it is to urinate after sex.
This is another sort of fact or fiction question. There was another call up on the board that dropped off for some reason where a woman was calling in saying that her professor at college had said there's no sperm in pre-cum, which okay. is a yes. Hang on, it's a different. Just you're just reminding me of this, Grace.
Right.
So these fact or fiction questions, and there definitely is sperm in pre-cum, though there isn't always.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And you can't know whether you're a spermy or not spermy.
Right.
Some guys are creating sperm.
So
sometimes.
Not willing to take that.
Do
chance.
Do not take that chance. And it has been clearly shown in some cases highly concentrated in sperm. Now, the pee after sex thing is something that kind of goes round and round. It's a good idea to sort of flush things out so whatever bacteria, particularly for women, get pushed up towards the bladder are flushed back out again. Whether it really does anything, we don't. There's debate about it.
Right, but there's also the can you.
Can like, you pee?
Yeah, what if you don't have to pee?
That's the male part.
Because my wife always, you know, and I don't think she realizes that she's doing, but that's like one of the first things she does.
Goes pee.
Yeah. And I don't. It would,
it's hard, well,
it would
difficult.
Involve, it would, you know, ruin my method of finishing rolling over and going to sleep.
Not only that, it would also finish the wiper spray coming out of you, spraying
exactly.
the bathroom.
Exactly
not,
right.
A cool thing, getting in the magazine rack and everything. That is hard as a male to urinate after sex, but it...
Or right before.
Or yeah, any time there's tumescence, it's difficult.
Right.
And having said that, though, it's not a bad idea at all. Whether it really does anything significant, it definitely, if you're going to get an STD, it doesn't prevent that. Let's put it
right.
that way. If you've been exposed
right.
to something.
But the thing is, with bacteria being pushed up to your bladder, this is my God hates women theory. It's just you got the worst deal on plumbing. You have your period. You have to have babies, which gotta hurt.
Yeah.
You get yeast infections almost constantly, bladder infections. None of that stuff ever happens to guys. Well, God hates you.
Oh. You've not had, as we say, the male genital tract after the age of 60.
No.
That's when the fun kicks in.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The prostate stuff. And all. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Am I in for a treat that I've missed this whole time?
You think you've been kicking the crap out of your body and been getting by. Whoa, wait to see your prostate sex out after you.
And okay.
The old saying is you don't want to have a female genital tract under the age of 50. And you don't want a male's after 50.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm never really want a male's. I mean, except my own.
You don't want to own
one. Okay, that's good to know.
And then, you know, the whole thing about childbearing and all, we've lost track of the fact that that used to be the way most women died.
Yeah.
It was a very
right?
common thing. And yeah, we talk about the drive to have children. If there was a single rectal tear in a male, there would be no more children delivered ever.
No, absolutely. I swear to God, if I had to have babies, there would be a barren desert.
No, there'd be no way because we have no drive to have the baby thing. Women actually have a drive to create the baby thing.
Right, I understand that. But the thing is, like, the pain involved, because you're talking now about recent history where most women did, in fact, die in childbirth.
Yes.
There's also a 50-50 shot that after you carried the baby to term, the baby would pass.
Oh, back then. Oh, yeah. Very few people made it out of childhood.
Right.
And then once you got the child, you're
Lincoln's kids. Half of President Lincoln's kids died.
All except one.
Is that right? By the end, was it all but one?
Teddy. Just
Willie died.
Willie and Eddie.
And Eddie died. Right?
Eddie, is that his name?
Oh, look at us go.
there were
But, I mean, why would you ever do that? It hurts really bad, and they might die. Bummer. I'm not doing it.
Tad and Willie died. And then the one. Yeah. All right, Grace, thanks for your call.
I hope we helped you about your peeing thing.
We're busy talking about Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
We're on to something else. We're very distractible here. All right, here's Ashley. Ashley.
Yes.
What's up?
I have a problem with not remaining faithful in any relationship I've ever been in for, like,
that is a problem.
All right.
And? And I'm not sure if it has anything to do with the fact that my parents are divorced.
Poor slut bitch.
Hasn't really ever had a happy relationship since then. Does that affect, like, because I've heard that your parents' relationships kind of had a lot of effect on your relationship.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, sure. There's various sort of forms of why people cheat. Women. It's different for men, different than women. Women, some people cheat because they're an addict and just in their disease and just carrying on and doing things because they think it feels good. Sometimes, what's that?
Does that ever go away?
Oh, you an addict, you think?
I think so.
Okay. Let me give you some of the other possibilities. The other possibility is that you were severely abandoned and, you know, neglected or abused as a kid, and so you're attracted to guys that are very abusive and neglecting, abandoning and neglectful and cheating just as what you do in response to their neglect in the relationship. Or the flip side to that is you can't tolerate closeness because of having been abandoned, neglected, or abused, and you sabotage every good relationship by cheating.
Any of those sound familiar?
A lot of it.
All of it.
Because here's where this is going. This is going to be a thing eventually that you cannot control. And not having the excitement of someone on the side
just
or somewhere to go.
Bring a TV cameras into your house. It'll just go spiral out of control.
Yeah, exactly right. But eventually, there'll be no satisfying you. Eventually, you'll have the love of one man who really does love, respect, and admire you. But without the thrill of the pool boy, you're not going to be able to maintain it. And when you find the pool boy attractive, your husband and her boyfriend will leave you for it. And this will go on and on, and it will be the bane of your existence.
That's the attic size side.
I would do anything to have been faithful to my wife. I love my wife a disproportionate amount. I'm just outrageously in love with my wife, and I could not remain faithful to her and almost lost her because of it. And I don't know any different because I have cheated at every single relationship I've ever been in.
Wow.
And it will end everything that you hope to be romance when you get older.
So, how did you stop?
Sobriety.
I'm new. But, being sober for me. Because I still have all the impulses. Don't get me wrong. I still have absolutely all the impulses. I still think about sleeping with every hot girl I see. But because there's not 2 to 3 drinks in me, I don't act.
Right. That's not going away,
feeling. No, I know.
It's just, no, but that's okay. That's a normal feeling. It just needs to be put in, put
it's
in
a
context.
Hassle.
Yeah.
Because at one point, I want to give this young lady...
You go back on steroids, it's going to be a problem.
I want to give this young lady sound advice, but part of me wants to go, hey, you're cheating on your boyfriend tonight? You know, it's a bad call. You really have to get this under control, or it's going to ruin every relationship you've got, and you'll die an old, lonely woman.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's nice.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Well, the one thing you can do if you're truly not fully addicted is go ahead and stop. If you are addicted, you won't be able to stop. You need to get help. Okay?
Okay. How do I get help?
Oh, my, she's really... How many times have you cheated?
A lot.
20?
How old are you?
Every chance I get.
She's 20.
She's 20. How many serious boyfriends have you had?
Serious, probably like 2, maybe 3.
So I'm going to go that you've cheated close to 20 times.
No, more than that.
Wow.
40 times?
Busy little beaver.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't stand the guy I'm with right now, and I think that might be why he smokes marijuana and.
All right. Are you doing any drugs?
No, I don't. I don't even drink that often. I don't do drugs. We have a son together, and that's basically the only reason I'm with him.
The guy you can't stand is the father of your child?
Yeah.
How old's your kid?
He's one.
Were you sexually abused growing up?
No.
That was a long pause on no, Doc.
But this is not hanging together for me. This is not fitting.
I swear to God, I was not sexually abused.
Have anybody ever thought maybe you were bipolar?
I think I am.
Yeah, I got to tell you, this is not quite fitting together for me. There's something missing. I mean, my crystal ball is cloudy.
My mom was physically abused by her ex-husband.
But not you.
Not my dad, but my stepdad.
How is your relationship with your dad?
We didn't get along growing up, but I think that's normal. But now it's great. We're really close now.
And he was not abusive to you or anything?
What?
He was not abusive to you?
No.
Come in, give me a hug.
I would not get so focused on the cheating, because I have a feeling there's probably a lot more behaviors here you're not thinking of or don't see as sort of part of all this.
Right.
That if somebody were to sit down and evaluate you carefully, they could put these pieces all together. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest you just go see a good therapist or psychiatrist, have a full evaluation. And see.
Go to a psychiatrist, not a therapist.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Well, the psychiatrist is more trained to come up with a diagnostic impression.
And more trained to give you a prescription for what you need, because I got to tell you something. Since maybe not the last time I saw the doc, but before that, I've always been bipolar. The problem with any psych meds is if you take them, they convince you you don't need them.
Because you're feeling so much better.
You start feeling all normal and act like everybody else. You go, why am I taking all these chemicals? That's crazy. Yeah. And the next thing you know, you are Abraham Lincoln. So the fact of the matter is, and I hate to be the kind of guy that says I'm sitting here and doing a good job, I hope. But actually, I'm sitting here doing a good job and reasonably contained because I take my meds on time. If it's bipolar, don't flip out. Take your meds, and they really work.
Right. The idea is to make you better,
yeah.
not to medicate you.
Most of the meds you take are completely organic anyway. I take lithium. Everybody goes, ooh, you take lithium? It's a salt. Mm-hmm. It's a salt. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And it really works.
That's Danny Bonaducci. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. There's no mistaking that voice. Danny and I will take a quick break and return.
Yep, Loveline will be back.
Glad to hear it.
Loveline will be right back.
Everybody, Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Everyone's special in their own way. It's when they're in treatment day, they can't be treated special. No, talking about specialness.
I was just saying off the air to Dr. Drew, I'm surprised how often I agree with you, but you know why? Because when I go to rehab, and I've gone three times, or I'm in a situation where there's a doctor, you're almost always the enemy. You're the guy between me and my drugs.
Right.
You know? And I'm going to tell you why I need my drugs and why you're wrong about me. And you might be right about Steve over here. He shouldn't do drugs, but you're the guy between me and my drugs. And usually I'm right. It's like, this guy doesn't know. He doesn't understand. I mean, I shouldn't do drugs. He's right about that. But everything else he says is stupid.
Right.
And you're the like I've said before, you're the first normie I've ever met that like seems to get how what this really is like and what we really think. Because we think very earnestly about our behavior.
Oh, it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Hey, I think I've told you, I think addiction, I'm going to show my hand on this one. I think addiction is a more evolved form of the human being. Because if you look at, listen to this, you're going to love this. Where the disease emerges in its full bloom,
right?
It's on parts of the globe that have withstood isolated populations that have withstood multiple generational genocidal military assaults. Scottish, Irish,
jeez.
Central European. So the survivors, and you know what you guys can do.
Right.
You guys can survive.
Oh, yes, we can.
And what is evolution but survival of the fittest?
Absolutely.
The survivors bring with it this gene. It has a side effects. No one said survival has to be a direct line to health. It's just in that circumstance, the survivability.
The layman's version of that is totally how do a million junkies without jobs score $200 every day?
Right, that's right.
You know, that's true. That's it, because we're smart, man, because I can get to some girl said to me the other night, I want it all. And when I have it, then I want yours. And that's that's totally true. And we have ways of getting it.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It is. I never thought that was interesting.
So there we go. Loveline 1-800-LOVE-191. Let's take an easy call. Here's Robert. What's up, Robert? He's 14. It's for Danny.
Hello?
Hey, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Sup?
Sup?
Yeah, this is my first time on the radio.
Cool.
Yeah, so I called because this is a girl at school that I really like, and I need some tips on asking her out.
Now, I will tell you, I'm going to give you advice, but here's the problem. If my advice does not go well for you, you're a young man, and this will, I think, bother you a lot. If it doesn't work out. Because my advice, I mean, the first thing you could do is, as casually as you want to, slip her a note. Mm. And that's kind of undercover.
How about talk to one of her friends?
That's another good way, is talk to one of her friends, see if she's, you know, likes anybody, has a boyfriend or anything like that. And the other way is, once you have any of this information that she kind of likes you and she doesn't have a boyfriend, you should walk right up to her and look her in the eye and ask her out. That's my advice. But the problem is, I'm not 14. If I got shot down, I'd just move right to the girl on the next bar stool.
Get her drunk.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Anderson. Well done.
But I think girls appreciate some sort of, you know, that you, for lack of a better term, got up to the plate.
See, at 14, a lot of girls' parents won't let them go out.
Right.
And you need to sort of find a way that you could kind of hang out with her somewhere, like with a group maybe, go to a movie. Robert, there's two things I would advise. One is to find a way to engage her in a conversation about some weekend activity that you and a group of people are doing. And realize, if she shuts that down repeatedly, if she has reasons that seem sort of what we'd call spurious or vague reasons for not participating, take that at what it means, which is not interested.
Not interested.
They will. If a girl that's interested will at least say, "Oh, I can't make it this weekend, but I would love to fill in the blank."
Right.
They will leave. They will keep leaving the door open for you if they're interested. But accept reality if she's not.
And just so you know this, because if this goes badly and you're just sitting there crying, going, what a drag, she doesn't like me, the next 15 years of your life is littered with chick pain. It's coming no matter what. Sorry. It's a juggernaut that cannot be stopped. You're going to get your heart broken by four more girls minimum.
So on that happy note, Robert, enjoy. You okay, buddy?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, girls, man. Paige. What a hassle.
Even at 14, you're jaded.
I know.
Paige.
Oh,
hi Paige.
Sorry. My question for Danny Bonaducci.
Right here, Paige.
I actually wanted to ask you if you think that being a child actor was part of the cause of why you have problems with alcohol.
No, I don't believe that for one moment. I think partly, neither of my parents drank, so that rules out the genetic, but it is in fact genetic. For me, it was not. I think
grandparents?
No.
What's your ethnicity?
Italian and I guess Irish, but I go with whatever your last name is.
Well, go look at the Irish side. Yeah. You'll find it.
That's true. But the thing is, for me, because everybody wonders that, you know, to being a child star screw you up, and I do not believe so. I think if I was a realtor, I would be a recovering alcoholic realtor. It's in my nature. It's in my genetic buildup. So, no. Do you have any, do you want to be an actress, maybe?
I used to.
Yeah, no, it's a fine profession. Jodie Foster did it, and she's now got her Academy Awards on her mantelpiece. Ron Howard played Opie, a big star. He's got his box office record-breaking and Academy Awards on his mantelpiece. There's no reason not to follow your dreams at all. Do not let me and Todd Bridges dash your hopes.
I think there's a side to this that people don't sort of factor in, which is the parents that push kids into this field. There has to be a highly, highly motivated parent behind the child oftentimes. And that parent may have some stuff, may have some issues, or maybe married to somebody with some issues.
Everybody in my family has issues.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I want you to know, if that's something that you're worried about in some kind of way, that your profession and your hopes and your dreams lead certainly to rehab, they do not. I don't believe that.
All right, Paige?
Okay.
Well, have fun. Good luck. Go get an Academy Award and say Danny was right.
Okay.
I want to hear that at the speech.
Me too.
At the podium. Nicholas, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, Nicholas? What's
up? Hi. I had a question about myself. I find myself attracted to guys that look like women, but not women.
They have to have a penis.
Yeah.
Oh, this is bogus. Oh. There we go.
Liar, whore, you know it.
Right. Here's one. This is Ben. What's up, Ben?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Ben.
You guys hear me? My phone's
yep.
Bad.
We got you.
I just want to say, Danny Bonaducci, man, it is an honor to talk to you.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
I got mad respect for you, dude.
Thanks.
You were just talking about those other people that you think succeeded and you failed or something. I would not put you in the same category as Todd Bridges.
Thanks. I didn't do Dancing with the Stars, like, or Ice Skating with the Stars or whatever it was. But I did celebrity boxing, so who am I to judge?
Todd has my...
You're a true original Hollywood survivor, dude. So
thanks, man.
Todd has my favorite Speed story, though.
He does?
He got so strung out on shooting Speed that he began believing that his grandmother had raised his house up 3 feet and built a factory underneath it to send green men up to torment him.
Wow.
And he saw so many of these green men, he finally started loading pistols, carrying them with him, and then shooting at him, and then running down the street shooting him. That's when he was arrested.
Wow, shooting at green men?
Green men that his grandmother produced from a factory under his house. That is amphetamine psychosis.
That's huge, man. Yes. That's big. I saw some bugs and maybe a rat or two that weren't there.
You talked to Todd about the green man and his grandma.
He's been sober like 12 years now, right?
Yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you're too kind. Did you have a question?
Yeah, actually, I did for Drew. Sometimes when I ejaculate, and the semen has a bluish tint to it.
That's okay.
If that's normal, because some people were telling me it's normal, some people were saying it wasn't.
No, it's normal. It's usually.
Can I tell you what's not normal? Telling enough people to get a big argument about your blue sperm.
Yeah,
that's not normal.
Yeah, a little too much information
for
your
Bobby,
body.
Hey, Bobby, check this out. It's blue.
Also,
you're talking about...
It's a lot. I mean...
But you're not talking about a deep...
Normal. It could, fill up a mason jar or something.
Oh, is this bogus?
No.
What?
He just means a lot.
No, but we have a... There's a mason jar is a clue that it's a bogus call.
Oh, is that true?
Is it bogus, Ben?
He hung up.
Oh, it's
yeah, you win. I went to all that trouble.
Well done. We got to take another break here. It's 1-800-LOVE-191. Ben, that was a decent call. It was good. It was all right.
It was good,
You fell for it, and you slipped in the mason jar in a novel and in a new way. Danny Bonaducci in here with us. We're going to take another break. Be right back. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci, our guest tonight. Thank you, Danny, again for joining us.
Thank you for having me, doctor.
And you did not miss that cigarette break.
No.
That one you made. That's good.
But that should show you how entertaining you are. I smoke at the commercial breaks whether I need one or not, thinking, oh, my God, I'm not going to get to smoke again soon. And that was the first one I missed.
Excellent. And we were trying to get in touch with Tom from MySpace. And somebody called us the other night and mentioned that the creator of MySpace...
Right.
Had mentioned that he would not do any radio shows other than Loveline.
Really?
So we're trying to get a hold of him to bring him on up here. And producer Ann created a little site, create her own site, and she sent emails to him, but he must get billions of emails.
I would assume. Well, when you join MySpace, you immediately have one friend, Tom.
Tom. Well, she emailed him, and I'm sure just getting the cue there, but if anybody knows him or can, we don't want to get the fake one that was on in San Diego that sort of generated all this controversy. Apparently some guy came on and said, what?
But apparently that one was funny, and he says he's not funny, so let's not have him on.
Well, give him a chance. So,
no,
you know what?
He said anyone who knows me knows that wasn't me, because that guy was funny.
If that's true, have me on at the same time.
Danny will make him funny.
Help it?
Yes.
Yeah. I've only had one interview where I couldn't make the person funny. I said this was on my old TV show, The Other Half, and they had this grandmother who was making muffins and was a big success in the stores, and they said, but she's really dead, man. I said, hey, if I can't make this person entertaining for the next 6 minutes, I shouldn't have this job.
And
I always say that, and I'm always right. I could not make her entertaining to save my life.
What was she just...
She'd say, uh-huh, and that's it. So you're having a big success with these brownies?
Uh-huh. So
I'll come on and I'll help Tom out.
All right, let's take some calls.
Have you started your book, Million and One Little Pieces, yet, Danny?
Not yet, but I still think about that title. You're a genius.
This is Daniel. What's up, Daniel?
Oh, hey.
Hey, Daniel.
Dr. Drew? Danny?
Yeah.
Yep. I actually had a couple questions. My first question was, I can't keep a relationship for longer than a month. And my second question was, I remember when Adam was on, he said he had a problem with sweat.
Right.
And his forehead and face would sweat.
Yeah, I always get sweat on my forehead, like all the time. And how do you get rid of that?
There's an operation for that where they sort of ablate this what's called the stellate ganglion. It's a sympathetic ganglion in your neck. They go in through your chest and do it. I don't have the name of the doctor that does that. If you go online and look up hyperhidrosis, you'll see a lot of different creams and things you can put on, and then there are finally these surgeries, which work quite well. You'll also see websites about side effects of the surgeries. There are a few people that don't like how they feel after they get the thing taken care of.
Are they tingly or not?
They start sweating everywhere else.
Everywhere else.
And they start having aches and pains. Yeah.
I just so you know, you're not alone, man. I sweat so profusely from my armpits and other areas, but mostly from my armpits, that all my clothes on both of my talk shows were lined with, I'll just tell you, were Kotex. They put Kotex in my shirts. Mm-hmm. So not because I always had to wear black. I looked like Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. And we had designer clothes and blues, and I just can't wear them. But then I started taking a prescription antiperspirant. Do you know the name of it by chance?
Pill?
No.
Just
a couple of drops, not a roll one, but
no, I
forget it.
It
I forget it too.
It's
but
like Sure Thing or something.
It totally
like
worked. Yeah. It completely worked. Also, there is something they do for sweaty palms with Botox.
Right. They can have botulinum toxin injection.
Is there a chance? Can you do that with your forehead?
They can, but again, finding the person that knows how to do that properly can be a little bit dicey.
Because I'll tell you what the big problem is here, if he gets a sweaty forehead, is if you are in fact making love in the standard man-on-top position, you can drip sweat right off your nose, right into her face, and boy, will she be done.
That's cool.
There's a mood killer right there.
That's cool. Here is Grace.
Done that.
What's up? Oh, nice. Grace.
Yes.
What's up?
Okay. Actually, I had two short questions. One is, when dealing with premature ejaculation, can women have... Because I always hear about, like, one-minute men, and I think I'm that, but a girl.
What happens after you climax? Are you done? Do you want this activity over with, or are you cool?
Oh, no. I'm, like... Well, I mean, I guess I could hold off for a few minutes and go again. But I just sometimes feel stupid because I go before he does all the time.
Okay, because here's the rule. You ready? You can't be too rich, too thin, or have the girl finish too fast. It's fine.
Yeah,
everybody likes it.
Yeah, but then I sometimes feel like I want to, I don't know, like it's kind of sensitive, you know?
Yeah, I do know.
Do you,
you just want to stop focusing on it, just kind of like men sometimes talk about doing.
How long have you been with this guy? How long have you been with this guy?
I'm like going on 5 years.
Okay, so this has been your only boyfriend, right?
Yeah, well, I had a boyfriend before him. I've had a boyfriend since, like, 14, so yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, this is really the first one. And you know, these relationships that start at 16 are not supposed to go a lifetime, particularly.
Right, they're not.
And I would think any guy with any degree of experience would sort of know how to work this out, would have some ideas about how to make this go properly. And you guys
are first, too. So.
I get it. I know. Yeah. And this is should be a problem that would be easily overcome with a little bit of creativity. Easy.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't like foreplay on me at all because then I feel like I'll go if, like, I don't oral because I'll go, like, within, like, maybe 45 seconds, a minute.
I suspect that in the right... It's getting ridiculous, but in the right circumstances, you'll be somebody who would be having multiple orgasms.
Okay.
You're sort of that person.
So and God love you.
Okay. And then my next question, actually, how young can you have an orgasm as a girl? Because people always told me, like, now is my prime, but I actually don't remember a time when I didn't have that feeling. I didn't know what it was called.
Yeah,
I didn't
call it an orgasm, but I would rub
on things, and I would have the same kind of feeling.
Hey, one of my girlfriends says her first one was sliding down the banister as a small, small child.
Yes, and the women that are highly orgasmic and tend to have orgasm with intercourse and tend to be multi-orgasmic tend to have experiences very early.
And that's not weird, having that feeling?
No, and I've seen nothing to suggest that has a psychological basis. That seems to have a biological basis to it, genetic basis.
Just so you know, there's a portion of the female population that never has an orgasm. They're weird. Okay.
Right, that is an unusual thing. And most of the female population, their biology is such that they don't really begin having an orgasm until in their 20s, and there's no drive to masturbate till quite a bit later, if there ever is one. It's a different setup.
And most of my girlfriends, everyone I've talked to, a lot of them have a problem with orgasming, and they never had one, or you know what I mean? And so, like, I don't like to tell them, well, I've been feeling these things since I was, like, six.
Yep.
But so that's pretty normal to feel that.
You're not called Grace for nothing.
Well, I just didn't know.
Start doing my job, man.
Child, and I would rub up on like pillows and stuff, and I thought like I was a pervert, and I just didn't know what was wrong with me, and if other girls did that. I've never met another girl that told me that they rubbed on things at like 4 and 5.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So nothing.
But
wrong
I'm
with
actually.
Me.
This relationship you're in is a little more concerning to me, frankly. I'm wondering if this is the right thing for you. It just sounds a little bit like you're clinging to something just because. But
the relationship that I'm in?
Yeah.
No, I guess I can see that.
I've always kind of stayed with the same people for like a long, long time.
No, I get that, and that's a good thing. That's a virtue. Right. However, you've never learned how to assess whether it's something you really want to be in or not. And yeah. I think you might want to give yourself a chance.
As cute as it is when people tell me they married their high school sweetheart and they're my age, I just think, what have you missed?
It's just this whole assessment process that you missed. And I'm not saying you have to go out and sleep with a bunch of guys. I'm saying just to date people and to sort of figure out who you are, what kind of people you like being around, how you experience yourself with other people. That can be kind of fun, interesting, and a growing experience.
But if you do go out and sleep with a bunch of guys, make sure you lie to your fiancé. Nobody really wants to hear 30 because he's going to be a stupid ass and he's going to ask you how many men you've been with. And if you're honest, you're going to just spoil it forever. So just say 3 and be done with it.
Oh, not even that many.
More mystery, less history.
Very nice.
And be careful. Be careful with contraceptives. Use something and safe sex with condom, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
All righty.
Glad we worked that out for you.
All right. Good luck.
Just saving lives one at a time, you and me, Doc.
She feels normal now. Jane, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, Jane.
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
You too.
Hey, I have a question.
Hey.
I'm 30 years old, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been to rehab 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to me is that I get sober, and then very shortly thereafter, I totally lose my motivation to stay sober.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to kind
of... Do you get depressed?
I get horribly depressed.
Have you ever had that treated?
Yeah.
You've had your depression treated?
Tried, different medications and stuff, but nothing really seems to help.
Have you gone to therapy?
Yes, actually.
Have you ever had any severe consequences from your alcoholism?
That's what I was going to ask.
They're pretty bad.
What's your motivation to get sober when it happens? For me, I sum it up with saying sirens and screaming. That's what happens when I go out for any length of time. Now, shorter times. The last few times I went out, there was hysteria so quickly. But what is the havoc you wreak when drunk? What's the worst thing you do that makes you want to go to rehab for the third time?
Well, I've woken up 51-50'd.
Right.
I've lost a job. I've sideswiped a car.
Okay, good enough.
I had a long talk with a group of addicts today about this very issue. And the one sort of take-home that I got from talking to these folks was that it has to be something that is severe enough that you can keep going back to it.
Right.
In other words, it will motivate you going forward. It was scary enough, awful enough, disgusting enough, whatever enough, that you can look at that and go, oh, no.
That terrifies me. Does that mean I have to, get drunk and go out and kill somebody?
I hate that, too. Yeah, I hate that, too. As a good codependent that I am, I like to be able to help people and save people. And
well, I'll tell you what, maybe I can help you here, because the answer is no. You don't have to go out and kill somebody. In this society, I am a white, educated male. That makes me privileged, and I've ruined it, and I've gone to jail over and over. I've been to institutions over and over, and here's what my bottom was, because I still have all my money. I still have a big house, a lovely wife, and 2 nice kids. I have my car. I have a 1967 GTO. It breaks constantly, and I can afford to fix it. You know what my bottom was? When I called my wife from rehab after a week, and I said, "Hi, baby, I miss you." And she said, "Hi." I said, "Do you miss me?" And she said, "No." What do you mean you don't miss me? She said, "It's hell to live with you. You're drunk. You break the furniture." No, I don't miss you. This house is reasonable without you. And that's my bottom. After jail, after everything, the woman I love didn't miss me. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom that stopped me. Mm-hmm. So, no, you don't have to kill anybody. You can just wait till everybody hates you.
It takes what it takes. Valerie, what's up?
What's a 51-50 before?
It's a hold against your will for a danger to self or others.
Yeah, 72 hours.
Hi, hello?
138 is reckless endangerment, I believe.
Nice. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Dr. Drew.
What's up?
11-11 is the time right now.
Mr. Bonaducci, I think you're a sexy bitch.
Thanks, baby.
Sexy bitch.
Sexy, I like that. I like when women are forceful with me.
Okay. My question is, I've been smoking pot ever since I was 14, 21 now, and I recently stopped. But my question was, is there anything that you can do, supplements that you can take to regain your memory? And because I forget things all the time. I lose things all the time, and it's very difficult for me.
Did you say you stopped?
Yeah, I stopped recently.
How long ago?
I would say about a month ago.
It's going to take a good 6 months to come back, and no, there's nothing to hasten it. The one thing to watch out for is the depressions can be quite intense at this stage.
Oh, yeah. I'm dealing with that myself,
Yeah,
if I
well,
get
you're
depressed, I'll just go out and take a jog or something, you know.
Well, that's good, but
that is good.
Depressions can be profound, though. The incidence of suicide is rather high in the first 6 months of marijuana abstinence.
Okay.
So you have to be very careful with yourself on that. That will make your concentration capacity diminished. It will create anxiety. That will affect your ability to learn. The pot itself, a big study just came out a couple days ago that showed profound memory problems in long-term pot smokers, which you are. And also, I've seen research that shows there's a diminished growth of the frontal areas of the brain, which is, again, a learning personality area, emotional processing.
Omega-3 and omega-6
no,
fatty
no, acids. Valerie, just no. Stop smoking pot. Go to meetings. Just stay. You're fighting a nuclear war with a pop gun. Anything
nice.
Anything you put in there is nothing compared to what those drugs do to you. Just stop it, relax, it'll come back. It comes back, that's the good news, but it could take about 6 months.
You know, after I got my bike wreck a couple of months ago, and I had been, you know, I've done such severe things to my brain that I didn't know if it was the bike wreck, and now I do think it was the bike wreck, but it was the first time I've ever had any serious memory loss at all that I was aware of.
This is after the head injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it is so frightening and so odd. It's odder than when you're really high and seeing stuff that's not there because it goes away and you go, oh, those green men weren't there.
Right.
But when you can't remember a conversation you just had and somebody looks at you with a straight face and said, we just had this discussion, you get afraid to say anything for fear that you just said it.
Right.
You know, it's really scary.
Sheesh.
So hang in, the doctor's right. We'll come back.
This is Jay. What's up, Jay?
What's going on?
What up, Jay?
You are the man.
Thank you,
sir.
Read
people like a book.
Yeah. Good times.
And Danny, I heard you were at Magic Mountain recently.
No.
Were you there with your kids?
No.
I was there not too long ago. I was there for Halloween.
Yeah, someone was lying to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. I've been spotted a lot of places.
Oh,
I wasn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to find the truth these days.
Well, you can just call here and ask me. What can we do for you, man?
Nothing. I had a bogus call. I just want to say what's up. I just always like to...
Oh, that's cool.
Screeners.
Does anybody actually admit it like that?
No, but it's refreshing.
Yeah.
They do occasionally.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you later.
It's hard to get through those guys. I like to beat them.
All right. Is there anything else?
Nope. Dr. Drew, keep saving people.
Thanks, Jay. Take care, buddy.
See you.
It was actually refreshing.
Yes. It's a little...
Now, if you're thinking you should try it, you're wrong. Yeah, it's been done.
A little sport for him. Gretchen. What's
Hi.
Up, Gretchen? Hey.
Okay, so my question is for Dr. Drew.
Hang on a second, Gretchen. Is that how your wife spells your name?
No. Let's see. G-R-T-C-H-E-N?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What's up, my dear?
Scared me.
I'm bulimic.
She's my wife.
Yeah,
she's
I've been bulimic for about 9 years, and in the last, like, 3.5, it's gotten really bad, but lately, I've been trying to quit, but I've noticed that when I do it now, like, I can't breathe, and it takes forever to do it. And I've been looking everywhere on the internet, like I'm wondering if I finally screwed my esophagus up, and I wanted some insight.
Well, that would be the least of the concerns that could cause what you're describing.
How are your teeth?
They're fine. I take good care of my teeth.
Okay, because the acids that you vomit up are really bad for your teeth. Yeah, I can spot a tweaker or a bulimic by their teeth every time.
Yes.
Oh, my dentist had no idea. I take very good care of my teeth because that's, like, one of my things. Like, I've done everything I can to hide it.
Right.
Like, only one person knows.
All right.
It.
Well, the problem is that you can cause heart disease this way. You've got some real serious heart problems, so the shortness of breath could be a heart problem. More likely that you're aspirating some of the gastric acid and getting into your lungs, and it caused serious lung damage. And that's probably more what's happening.
Boy, that's bad news.
That's not to mention the fact that you get softening of the bones, premature ovarian failure, and infertility. You know, this is a life-threatening condition.
The only person I've ever known that was bulimic died, and her kidney shut down.
The kidney failure happens. So what's the plan here?
Well, I'm on Effexor XR, and I'm like, I can't seem to find anyone like that I like therapist-wise that like understand.
It doesn't matter if you think they understand or if you like them. If they are trained well and know what they're doing, just listen to what they have to tell you and do it, because you're going to die otherwise.
And if you're not that hip to it, and I don't mean to put down PhDs. I really don't.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that I know that if I had to go to my PhD and he said, okay, we need your lithium levels checked and then for you to take lithium, so now you have to go see two more people, you have to take a blood test and see a psychiatrist, I'd lose it along the way. So I suggest cut out the middleman and go to a real MD, see a psychiatrist. They're incredibly learned, and they can give you the appropriate medication.
And they can be more the sort of head of a team. and to refer you to a PhD for the therapy. It's almost like seeing an orthopedist to get diagnosed, and you go send you to the physical therapist.
Okay, fair
enough. Same kind of model. All right, let's talk to...
Apparently you don't have the disdain for PhDs that I do.
Well, because I work with some good ones, and I admire what they do, and I appreciate what they do, too. The training is specific. And so, I have had some problems with some, marching off on their own without really having deep training and understanding of some of the things they're working with. And but then you get them with a team, and they work very well. Matt, what's up?
Are you choking on that?
Yes,
crap?
I choked on my own saliva. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
Hey, I guess this question will go for both of you guys.
All right.
It's about addiction. I've done a bunch of different drugs. I mean, I've tried coke and ecstasy, and I've never had any desire to ever do it again. And smoke cigarettes and quit, no problem. But gambling has just ruined my life. I can't stop. Wow. I've stolen, gone to prison. Lost all my friends, stole from family, and I thought I hit bottom when I went to jail. But then I just catch myself, last week dropping $5,000, and that, I don't know what to do. I mean, I've been to counseling, I've seen counselors, gone to AA meetings, and nothing works.
Right, because I got to tell you that this addiction, although I've never had it, I have no particular interest in gambling. It was so weird because I was just going to back up and let you do the talking. But I will say this: the symptoms are exactly the same. I lost my family. I went to jail.
Right.
It's the same exact thing.
The same stuff.
So that's my only input into this, is how interesting that is, and one of the few I don't have has the same repercussions.
It's a strange condition, gambling addiction. I have almost never seen gambling addiction without their first having been an addiction to a chemical. And I don't know how strung out Matt actually got. He says he used a bunch of drugs. I bet he got a little more going than he realizes. So that probably is what set him up.
Well, I only tried coke once, and I only did ecstasy 3 times, and I smoked pot every now and then, but I was never a pothead. I never had desires for it. Nothing
ever. Never drank heavily?
No, never heavily, ever.
Huh, interesting. Well, here you go. And there was some recent studies that showed that people taking a certain anti-Parkinsonian medication, Parkinson's medicine, suddenly developed gambling. Yes, I mean, full-blown gambling addiction.
That's so weird.
Yeah, isn't that wild? And so there's something about this condition that is unique, and I'm actually going to do it for the Danny helped me out on a TV show that's going to air in a couple of months, and I'm going to do another one on gambling addiction. And University of Nevada, Las Vegas, strange thing, wearing a shirt from there. I spoke there about a month ago, has a gambling lab where they set up a casino, and they put people in it and just observe them and really study them.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they know a lot there. We're going to go and explore what they know and see what this is. It's not a condition I understand well. I do know, however, that most people adhere to a similar model of treatment to other addictions. And that's a 12-step model. And just like every other addict who goes to 12-step goes, I did that, it doesn't work. I've heard that so goddamn many times. And it's because you go and you don't do anything.
Right.
You got to go and go and go. And you got to work with the sponsor. You have to do the steps. You have to do the work. And it takes a long time. So that's what I would suggest you do.
Okay.
All right. You got to go 2-3 times a day. I mean, you're having really severe consequences. Yeah, you're going to lose everything.
That's a big deal, man.
You got to keep your mouth shut and listen. You got to sit with the sponsor. You got to work diligently on those steps. And with time, it'll all start to make sense. But just saying I went to a couple meetings and it didn't work, that ain't the way it works.
And the ramifications, I mean, $5,000 today. I'm a blackout drunk, man. And five G's keep me drunk for 3 years. Yeah. Unless after I have 2 drinks, I start buying the bar drinks. But the fact of the matter is, that's a serious financial consequence that you probably can't afford.
What were you going to say, Matt?
Well, I already hit bankruptcy, and I went to counselors, and they told me that I'm the worst case they've ever seen for my age. They said
you're pretty bad, I got to say. Again, and you're clearer, too, in terms of being a pure gambling addict. That's not something I've ever seen, really. And what did you do at GA when you went just to AA, right?
Well, I went to a couple meetings there, and I just felt so out of place because everyone was old, and they all smoked, and all the, I just didn't feel like I was a part of that. So I went to an individual counselor, and I went twice a week. And she tried to put me through these different steps and things and read books and talk.
It won't work. It doesn't work. No. If that worked, we'd just do that.
Yeah. That's amazing, though.
Nothing I've tried has worked. And even when I went to jail and I was like, I am never going to do this again. I don't ever want to be here again. Then a month goes by and I'm doing it again.
Yeah.
Wow. He hasn't hit bottom yet. He needs to get raped or something.
Okay,
he needs
to
be somebody's bottom in prison.
Nice. Anderson always looking on the bright
side. I don't think that he's hit bottom yet.
No, he hasn't, and that's why he's not willing to go to any lengths to get better. Right. He's still calling the shots on how it's going to go. And whenever the patient, and when it's addiction, whenever the patient tells you how it's going to be and starts putting limits on what they're willing to do, chances are ain't
going
to work.
They're going back, absolutely. I know that from probably 15 years of trying to get sober.
That is Danny Bonaducci. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. We have to take another quick break, and then Dr. Drew and Danny will be right back.
If you need help, hang up and then dial.
Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191. Loveline will be right back.
Danny Bonaducci in with us tonight. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Let's see. This is Megan. Megan?
Yes?
Here you go. You're on with Danny.
Hi.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
There's this guy that works with me, and he's already, like, kissed, like, three girls, and I've kissed three boys before, but, like, how do you know if, like, he's just using me just for sex?
You mean for kissing sex or for real sex?
You're the cutest thing ever.
And what kind of, he's at work with you?
Yeah.
And he's, what kind of work do you do?
Target.
And he has kissed three other girls at the workplace?
Yeah.
He's just getting what he can get.
Yeah.
He's just out there doing what he can do. He doesn't mean he doesn't like you, but it does mean that if you start hanging around with him, he'll be on to other things for sure.
How can you tell if he does like me?
He kissed you, but he likes a lot of other people too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can't hang with that, if that's going to hurt you, stay away from this guy.
Okay.
Okay, I got to go with kissing. You have to be a grown person to work at Target, right?
She's 17.
I got this watch at Target.
Really. Nice.
Thank you. You're 17. I just find it startling. You know, I find kissing to be really intimate. That's a big deal, like, for me. To kiss somebody is a fairly big deal. And I don't do it particularly lightly. But still, if he's just, is he, like, making out with these chicks?
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think, Danny?
I thought he was going, mwah. You know, he just seemed all adorable and stuff. Yeah, I'm with the doctor on this. This is going to lead you nowhere good.
How old is this guy?
21.
Yeah. Nah. He's just moving around.
Yeah, move on. You're a 17-year-old girl. You have lots of prospects.
Okay.
Okay.
How come you're not in high school still?
I am.
You are, and you're working at Target.
Yeah. Industrious young lady.
You going to go off to college?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going?
I want Santa Barbara.
Yeah. All right. Good.
This guy will be you'll laugh at this someday.
Yeah, a distant memory. You can't believe I liked that guy that kissed people at Target.
And not only that, you'll be happy you didn't get more involved. Don't, okay?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad you're going to college, because otherwise Target's your entire future.
Yes, ma'am. John, what's up?
Hi.
Hey.
All right, I had a question about alcoholism.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, my dad is an alcoholic, and a lot of people on my mom's side are alcoholics, and I have clinical depression. And I was wondering what the chances are of me getting it. Is, like, a good chance of me getting it? Because, I mean, I'm 16. I haven't drank yet.
It's about 50% per child.
But he's also got clinical depression.
Well, children of alcoholics very commonly get depression. Particularly it doesn't necessarily
raise odds.
No, particularly women of alcoholic fathers tend to get depression. Having said that, it's about 50% per child. The only exception to that I've seen is if you have much North American Indian in you, particularly Cherokee, then it approaches 100%.
Yep.
Okay, I had another question, too, because, like, I don't know if this is just weird coincidence.
Hey, before you ask your next question, can I just say something to you? Because alcohol has completely just been a nightmare for me. It's turned most of my dreams into some kind of nightmare. Yeah. So let me tell you this. It's not predestined. The fact that you are 16 and know this, if you safeguard yourself, I just think that'd be the smartest thing ever. If you don't let this just creep up on you and you don't go, you know, I could have one or two, and just be smart and take care of this
now. The bigger mistake that most of my patients always do, which is, I know I can't touch alcohol. I just smoke pot. Or I just take these pills my doctor gives me. I've been taking the Xanax the way the doctor prescribed it for 4 years. What's the big deal?
Absolutely right.
That's how it gets going. If you're alert to the alcohol, the other drugs creep in.
Good.
John, what's up?
John.
John number two.
Hello.
Hey.
What's up, John?
Jonathan.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I'm here in the land of paradise in Oregon, living in the forest, out by myself. And I've got a couple questions. The first one is I fall in love way too easily and way too quickly. And
what are you doing out in the forest?
Why are you away from a girl?
Yeah.
And where'd you get the phone?
You know, I can't stand cities and cars and pollution. And I live among trees, and I have a big garden and a lot of fruit trees.
What do you mean you can't stand them? What does that mean?
When does Thoreau call this show?
Right now.
I like the. I prefer hearing birds and chirping.
Well, so why aren't you living with a group of people? Why are you living by yourself?
Well, that's the thing, is I have a big place, and I have two separate places. So I rent out another place to friends or family, and I'm not usually alone.
How do you support yourself?
I'm a glass blower. I actually make vases. And
okay. That's when this phone call just became legitimate. He's a glass blower. Now I believe everything he says.
Yeah. Focus.
I just got it now. Okay.
Well, I've been here about 6 years, and ever since my dad died in Arizona, I've been taking Xanax to sleep at night, and not every night. I only take about a half a milligram, and I usually only take it because I get scared, because I sometimes stay up for 3 days at a time. So that's kind of a concern, because I heard that it can lead to seizures if I try to get off of it.
Not a half a milligram. You're going to at least go down a quarter milligram for a while, and you're fine.
Oh, thank you. And the next problem is, of course, I fall in love very quickly and very easily, and I have a hard time hiding it and showing it, and I'm very transparent, so I usually let the person know really quickly, and I think I scare them off too fast.
How about the fact that you live in the trees? Kind of throw some chicks off.
Yeah, possibly, but there's also people that are into that.
Right.
Where do you meet these people?
Yeah, well, you go to rainbow gatherings.
I'm sorry I asked that.
What's that? What is that?
It's a gatherings where people from all over the country, every walk of life, get together and live in tents for 7 days. And there's a live-in community living to the best of possible and give away free food.
Sounds like Burning Man.
It's a little better than that because it's in nature, usually surrounded by rivers. And I'm just a nature person. Rivers, creeks, trees. It means privacy to me.
You're a commie. That's all there is to it.
Danny can't relate.
Yeah, you're a communist.
He's like, what? I can't.
I'm not sure. All right,
where's the plumbing and the chicks and the pizza?
But, John, you sound like a very bright man and a very sweet man.
Well, thank you. I've been listening to you since 1987, Dr. Dude.
Wow, wow. I'm worried about your aloneness. I worry about the fact that you protect yourself from your difficulty with boundaries, which is what you're talking about, where you go fuse with people, get sucked and swept into these relationships, that you deal with these boundary issues by avoiding contact with people and by being alone. And that's problematic because, you know, as you know, I'm sure in your reading, you found that work, love, and play are really what are required for people to be healthy and happy.
Yeah, after Jesus walked in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights, you know what he did? Hung out with his 12 buddies again.
Right.
Had some wine, told some stories.
Every day out in the woods.
What's that?
I hike about 5 miles a day with my two little dogs.
I'm sure. Work, love, and play.
How many times have you read Walden Pond?
Oh, never, sure.
Yeah, poet? I've never read him.
Who? Walden
Pond.
Never heard of him.
No, Thoreau. Henry David Thoreau.
Heard of him, yeah. But
right.
The hell does he read up there?
I don't know. Well, yeah, okay, people, work with people, relationships with people, essential for health.
Yes.
Okay, so you need to be around more people. That's what I'm saying. You need to practice being with people and practice boundaries with them. Practice not being invaded by them or invading other people. Date a little bit so you get a sense of how to do that. You need some more. You're isolating. You're avoiding all those things. And so when you do have an opportunity to have a relationship, you just get swept into it and lost in it.
Now, I've heard a splinter from a redwood never heals, so don't have sex with one.
What is that?
Just put it off for you there.
All right, let's talk about Doug here. Doug,
don't
what's
trust
up?
That guy.
Which I know you just couldn't relate it.
He's
all.
He's a communist,
to
man. We live in tents and share free food. Get a job, buy your own food.
What's up, Doug?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Doug.
So, my story is pretty much like I was with the girl for almost 6 years, and we got married last June. Well, she decided a month later that she was, you know, she found her ex-boyfriend who was, I guess, a love of her life when she was 13 or something. And so she left me and our 2-year-old daughter.
That's just total BS, by the way.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Well, and so like
leaving the daughter, the mom leaving the daughter.
That's almost unheard of. That's the worst girl ever.
Yes, that means she is ill.
That's totally true. Yeah. I've met some girls, or I've met some people as well as some girls that have either been run out on by their mothers or run out on their children as mothers, and nobody was okay. Yeah. Everybody was sick.
Yeah,
I've never heard of anybody doing that and being a normal human being.
Yes.
Well, so. As of lately, like it's been about 6 months, like since she left.
Yeah.
And so, but she lives with the guy now. It's her, this guy, and her best friend. Oof. And so, but she's been coming around to me, like talking about, like, you know, like she loves me and she wants to, you know, she misses our family and this and that. But it's like I finally, because I've been kind of like, you know, it really crushed me. We just had gotten married and like.
Of course it did.
Chaos. Is she doing drugs too?
See, it's everything that she's done in the last 6 months is out of her characteristics for me and her. I'm still close with her whole family, and like everybody's just like, what is she doing?
How old is she?
She's 22.
Okay, she spun. Here's what happened. She got married, freaked out, spun out, went back to the love of her life when she was 13. Even if this didn't have another ending, the 13, I loved this boy when I was 13, that's going to end badly.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to end badly no matter what.
There are really only two possibilities, really. Well, it's three, I guess. But the two most common things would be addiction.
Right.
She'd be loaded and doing crazy things in her disease. Second would be something called a borderline personality disorder. I suggest you look that up online or read a little bit about it, because that's what you're dealing with here is a borderline. They can't. Instability.
Women never run out on their children.
Profound instability in relationships is the characteristic, and they have to. They have such horrible issues with abandonment that they have to leave before they're left.
Right.
So
I understand that one.
Yeah.
But I mean, just so you know, man, literally, no healthy woman leaves her children ever. Wolves could not drag my wife away from her babies.
Right. All right, Doug.
Well, so do you think that there's a chance that, I mean, would I be able to like to help her through it? And like, I'm
no. No, a team of psychiatrists would have difficulty over 10 years to getting her through this, and they certainly should try. But you solving this one, no. Do you want to bring her into your life? I guess on behalf of the child, it's a smart thing to do. The child, you know, she's going to have rights to see the child. You're going to want to do it in a very structured way, in a very contained way. But to think about reconciling the relationship or rebuilding the family is very unlikely that somebody like this will be able to do that.
Just so you know, if this does come to shove, normally the mom just wins in a custody battle. A mom that abandoned her child almost never does. Yeah. A judge, instead of a guy who runs out on their family, getting back and getting shared custody, that happens a lot. A mom abandons their children, judges go, there's something wrong with that woman. There's something biological there.
I can't trust that. That's going to be a real serious problem. The sign of serious trouble. And not something that's just going to magically settle down. So it needs a lot of work. Okay?
But here's the good news. This, you know, if you're sitting there going, I wonder what I did. Is this me? Blah, blah, blah.
No.
This has nothing to do with
you.
Well,
it's something to do with you and that you chose her.
Yeah, that's a thing.
That's concerning to me that you're one of these fix-it guys. You know, you're the guy that has to be there for the girl that's always had the bad boyfriend. And this guy mistreats her. And I was so nice to her. And she, right? You're that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, my crystal ball does not lie.
Leads to you.
Right. Danny's the one that mistreats the girl, and you swoop in and go. And then you're all sitting there going, I don't understand why she always goes back to him.
When I treat her like crap, like she loves me, you know, but like when I'm there for her, she's just like, she writes me off. And I was just, my main question was like, is there any chance of us having like a functional, healthy relationship?
What did I say? I said, not with a team of psychiatrists for many years, you could do that. But you solving that on your own, no. You need to deal with her in a very structured and contained way. She's going to be in your life because of the child, so try to do it with help, with treatment, with professional supervision, that sort of thing.
I don't even trust women. I hate to say this, but I don't trust a woman that doesn't want to have children. If a woman says to me, oh, I never wanted to have babies, I go, whoops, strike one. There's something wrong with you. All normal, healthy women want to have a baby at some point.
It's a great book called Maternal Desire out there by a woman named Daphne de Marnief that really goes into great detail about what that feeling is. It's not spoken of anywhere. It drives me insane because it's such a hugely powerful thing for women, and they've somehow been, like, educated, or our culture has decided we can't talk about that.
Right.
We can't admit that. That's, you know, that would be a sign of weakness for women as opposed to something very powerful that they have. 1-800-LOVE-191 is the number. I am Dr. Drew. He is Danny Bonaducci. We're taking yet another quick break, and we will be right back.
Love Line. We'll be right back.
Please hold.
everybody. It's Love Line, 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci, none other. VH1, is show airing now?
No. It's done. I think the old episodes, last year's episodes, may be airing now. But dig this. Bought in 22 Latin American countries, and I was just out of Mexico City promoting it. Had a couple issues there. And they just bought in England.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
That will be fun. Scare them, dude. British.
Oh, crazy yank. All right, Megan, you're on with Danny. What's up?
Hi.
Hi, Megan.
I just had a question as far as, like, finding your G-spot, because I don't think I have one.
I believe that's probably true.
Because do you think anybody has one?
No, I think the whole thing is way, way too much is made of this.
Me too.
And that some women, like we talked to that girl a while ago, if you heard us discussing with her how she's been orgasming since she was six,
right.
And she has them in 3 seconds as soon as people start having intercourse with her. That's not because she knows where her G-spot is. That's because her entire pelvic anatomy is different.
It's because God loves her.
It was a genetic endowment.
Right.
And some women have orgasm with intercourse, and some do not. And if you
most do not, by
most
the way.
Do not. Most need some direct clitoral stimulation like oral sex. And Megan, that's probably you.
Yeah, I can just have like the clitoral orgasms. I can't have G-spot orgasms at all.
Stop differentiating between them. It's all good.
You have one, and you should thank God every single time.
Yeah, well, I hear so much about the G-spot one, so...
Yeah, you're hearing about something that different biological entities are experiencing, somebody with a different genetic configuration. And by the way, maybe their orgasms are not as intense as yours. You know what I mean? There's different things.
And by the way, every girl I've ever told, or every girl that's ever told me to find it and has given me directions, like go left, go right, go this, go that, nobody ever seems to find it when I'm looking. You know, it's like, oh, I guess you just can't find it. Steve was great at it. Like, shut up. You don't have one. If you had one, I'd know where it is. That's my job.
Yep.
You don't have one. Get your stimulation right where you need it.
There are some women that are sort of in that intermediate zone where they kind of can have clitoral orgasm or can have internal kinds of orgasm. That's probably about 20% of women.
Right.
And, you know, that's that particular configuration, and they can kind of focus in on things and kind of figure it out and get it going. Most can't do that. And Megan, I don't think you're going to be in that 20%. I think you're going to be in the more like the 60% category that just need direct stimulation.
And I think 19% of the 20% are lying.
Yeah. Well, everyone says that, wait till you're a little bit older, but I am 21 now, so...
A little bit older just means you gain full sort of control of your orgasmic function in whatever biological manifestations you have been endowed. In other words, your genetics determine how this gets played out.
Okay, have you ever seen an adult toy called the rabbit?
Yeah.
Okay, you know how that thing on top vibrates up and down so it touches you there? Notice they don't have a bestseller that doesn't have that touches you somewhere up inside. It's crap, you don't have one, do what the doctor says.
All right.
Okay.
All right, there you glad go. I can straighten this out.
Well done. You're
making me upset.
This is,
You can tell when I start to have a New York accent for no reason. I'm getting upset.
Carrie, what's up?
Hi.
Hey there.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of nervous.
Right. Well, I was just yelling at some girl. I'm sorry. It's okay.
Yelling about the rabbit.
My sister is 16, and she prostitutes on the internet, and
couldn't be more dangerous.
She got me to do it because I wanted to be with her, so I did it for a while. And
you
then
mean actual prostitution, you meet people on the internet and you go to some clandestine spot and have sex for money?
No, they call you and they meet you at a hotel or something usually. And
that's a good way to get killed.
Yeah, that's a huge way to get killed.
Yeah.
You're safer street walking. Not that I'm recommending that in any way, shape, or form, but you're safer being any other situation than that. That is stalker heaven.
Are you guys living in foster care or something?
We're both adopted now.
This is that behavior. This is not somebody coming from a regular family.
Still, how did you do that?
How much you get?
You're a dick.
What's that interesting?
How much money was she making?
I have a crystal ball. You don't see this thing?
This is not right, dude.
Things just emerge in the ball. I just see what I see there.
Sometimes I respect you. Sometimes I just hate you.
How much do you get, Carrie? Anderson wants to know.
It depends on what you want.
Want everything?
Probably around 300.
What's the menu include?
Greek, which is from behind.
Yep. Not from behind. You mean in the behind?
Yeah.
Right.
And then you can have BBBJs, which is bareback blowjob. And
that means no.
What's
con.
That run?
Just by itself.
Yeah.
It's like $100 just for a BBBJ.
A BBBJ. sounds like a sandwich.
BBBJ time. Huh?
Okay. First of all, let me just tell you right now, you're just gonna wind up just beaten, bruised, battered, or dead. For real, for sure.
This is bad.
Yeah,
this is
really
bad.
I'm out of it now.
We had a call last night. A woman named Crystal Clear called in, and I was cracking up all day about Anderson and the ski pole action, trying to imagine what it was you were looking at. Anderson?
No, you didn't go check it out when you got home, Drew?
No, I did not go check it out.
I
did not.
This guy's
I don't know how to.
Poles.
I don't know how to do it. Yeah.
I don't know how to get to it. But he said while we were talking to her, he went online and looked at her videos.
Right.
And went, oh, the ski pole action is impressive. I go, what? I was imagining Telemark skiing. What the hell does that have to do with the pornography? He sort of.
I got gotcha.
It.
Yeah.
That was Lance's actually. Lance pointed that out to me.
It's interesting that his name would be Lance. So what is your call about? Because I just want to straighten you out right now.
Well, I got out of it because my pimp hit
me. Wow. Oh, my God.
And so I ran away. And
Carrie, where are the adults in your life?
My parents?
Yeah.
They're sleeping right now.
Do they know you guys are doing this? Do they have any idea at all?
They did, yeah.
Okay. And what'd they say?
I didn't talk to my parents. I talked to my grandma.
All right, let me just give you one quick tip right here. Do you know why your pimp hit you?
Because I called him a bitch.
No, because it's his job. That's what he does. He keeps his whores in line. That's his business.
I've talked to pimps where they actually believe that the prostitutes want to be hit, that they desire to be hit. And I'm looking at my crystal ball, and I see two drug addict parents.
When we were little, my dad kind of made us do things with him.
Yeah,
so.
Got it. Crystal clear. Crystal, I see that, then I see the drug addict parents, both of them drug addicts. Oof.
Yeah. Mm. But I don't...
Dude, when your ass is kicked,
I don't know
your ass
how to
kicked,
help her,
thinking.
Because right now she wants to kill me.
Who does?
My sister.
Why?
All right, Carrie, listen, this is like a total meltdown house of fire here. We got to... I'm going to focus on Carrie, because I can't deal with the murderous prostitute sister, who is in really serious trouble.
Yeah.
Carrie, are you in a safe place right now?
Right now, yeah.
Okay, where are you?
I'm at home.
Okay, do you have any support? Treatment? Can you go places and talk and be supported?
I don't trust therapists.
Okay, how about like a 12-step program, something like that?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, do you have friends?
Yeah.
Do you go to school?
No, I'm homeschooled.
Oh,
homeschooled
what
by
a
whom?
Horrible idea.
I think all her friends pay her for sex.
By the wolves that she lives with. All right, Carrie. Unfortunately, we're really running out of time here. Oh. The basic recommendation is we're going to try to save Carrie. We're not going to try to save the prostitute sister. We're going to try to save Carrie because that's enough of a project right now. You don't need to get codependently involved with the sister. Unfortunately, I'm very concerned about her. But let's focus on one at a time here. Get one out of the burning building at a time. You need to be in a structured environment. Preferably school, maybe even some after-school structure or maybe some group setting of some type. 12-step would be great for you. Yes, you don't have to go to a therapist necessarily. You just need psychosocial support. You need structure. You need people you can talk to. You need people watching you, supervising you, supporting you. And the homeschool thing, I think, is kind of a bad idea. You need something during the day that's institution and structure where you can do things and get out of the house and sort of begin to regain a normal life, to learn how to live again. This has been a total meltdown. I'm sorry, but you need to get away from that household and involve yourself in the outside world a little bit. I'm glad it's safe now, and do get to a 12-step program as well. Right? Is that about right?
Yeah. No, you know what? I'm just kind of devastated a little bit, you know, as a parent, as a human being. This is a terribly sad call because...
You pansy.
I know what's going to happen to her.
I know.
I don't have the answers like you have the answers in the crystal ball like you have the crystal ball, but I have one crystal ball right here, and it has her dead in a hotel room.
Okay, and we'll be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191.
does it for another episode of Loveline. Danny, thank you so much for coming in.
I don't want to go.
I know. Do me a favor. One quick thing. We've got, Carson Daly coming up next week.
Yep.
Christian Finnegan from Best Week Ever tomorrow night.
Foo Fighters.
Gregory Itzen from
Seth
24.
Green. You
Seth
can't
Green.
Go
Howie
wrong.
Mandel. But tell me a quick story. We've got about 20 seconds here about a similar story to our last caller who was the prostitute.
Oh, I'll tell you real quick. I was telling my wife a long story about how I got in a fist fight naked on Sunset Boulevard. She didn't believe me. We ran into the guy I fought at Graceland in Memphis, and he told her the story and she believed me. At the time, I happened to live with a Japanese prostitute named Lily. And I just casually says, I said, whatever happened to Lily? And without giving her any significance at all, he said, oh, somebody cut her throat and put her under a bed. Like, she never really
Sorry,
was
what's
a
for
person.
Lunch? What's for lunch?
Yeah. Like, she was where, never really existed.
And that's where Carrie and her sister, please, dear, take care of yourself. Right, we got to go. The salad's going to crap out.
That's a happy moment for you.
Yes, thanks again, Danny. We'll see you tomorrow night. Good night and stay well.
It's like $100 just for a BBBJ.
BBBJ time.
Huh?
Okay.
Nothing.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Annie Golden. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.